podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Episode 179 of Below the Belt, one episode before the 180, which means we're going to talk exclusively about darts. just going to talk about darts, not even going to talk about boxing, I'm just going to talk about darts. But thankfully it's 179, and I'm joined by John McDonald. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Carl?
Yeah, I'm good. You any good at darts?
No, I improve after about 4 pints and then get markedly worse after 5. There's a sweet spot where I'm slightly less terrible. Are you any good?
No, I've not. There's those in London, actually, they're scattered throughout the UK. There's a place called Flight Club.
Yeah.
Where they're in London and all over the place, really. But I've been to that a few times and I do all right. And in my younger days, when I was 19, 20, I didn't have a job. I'd smoke a lot of weed and hang out with my stepbrother. He had a pool table and a dartboard. So I had a couple of years where I was just playing quite a lot of darts, and I have got 3 180s in my whole life. So I'm quite proud of that.
Nice. I am impressed.
Yeah.
I just like to say able to hit the board, but a double is a bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those. I don't know if that sport is... if that's a talent thing or if that is just pure practice. If you practice enough, you'll get good at it. I don't know what you think.
I don't know. Like, there's some people like Michael Van Gerwen who seem to be insanely talented because he was brilliant from the get-go. So unless he had darts in his hand from as soon as he can walk, I've got to assume that there's some element of natural talent there. What do you think?
I think you're probably right. I think because it's about hand-eye coordination and targets, and I like to think that anyone can do it, but now I think about it, I think you're right. I think there is an element of natural ability, and the Dutch players, they're always got a little bit more flair, haven't they? I always liked Van Barneveld, he was always my favorite, and then Adrian Lewis, I liked him as well. I don't know if Adrian Lewis still plays, I'm pretty sure he does, but if those two aren't any good, I'm not interested, to be honest. It's the same as snooker, and Luke Williams is probably listening to this. If Ronnie O'Sullivan goes out, I've got no more interest in snooker. Once he goes out the World Championship or whatever, the Masters, that's it. I'm turning the telly off. I've not got no interest anymore. Okay, there's a little bit gone on in the last... and I'm going to freestyle a little bit here. There's a few things going on. First thing is that the undisputed super bantamweight title fight was announced the other day. And actually... I got really excited about that, John. Inoue is going to be back on Boxing Day, boxing to Palace for the Undisputed Super Bantamweight title. He's looking to do, is it two Undisputed titles within 12 months? Have I got that right?
Yeah. Yep, that's what he's aiming for. And let's be honest, he's going to do it. Like... yeah. Tapala is good, but he's not on the level of Stephen Fulton. This should be a pretty routine win for Inoue and a massive achievement to go beside his name, which he absolutely deserves. Yeah. You know, but then the calls are going to start for him to go up to feather, which I think is the absolute maximum his frame can extend to personally. Mm. Like, I don't know if he'll be the same fighter up there, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Maybe he gets a Josh Warrington fight. But I think if Josh Warrington tried to headbutt those plucked eyebrows of his, I think he'd be in big trouble after that. Because he'd see the plucked eyebrows and just be like, oh, I don't have a bigger target here. I can't headbutt him like I normally would. And then Inoue would just smash him to bits. I'd watch that, though. I'd definitely watch that. I'd buy a ticket. Okay. So, yeah, that was just one of the lately... you know, to see Inoue's boxing, I just love how regularly he boxes, and he's always boxing in big fights. And, you know, people will forget he's boxing in America, he's boxing in the UK. Yes, he tends to box mostly in Japan, but that's because he's the money draw. he's done America, he's done the UK. I don't blame him for boxing in Japan. And they seem to, you know, treat the away fighters pretty fair over there. And he doesn't seem to be interested in any of the nonsense. So I'm definitely looking forward to that one. Also, something that's happening this weekend, it's Friday, and it's Amanda Serrano against Danilo Ramos for three of the four featherweight titles in the women's division. The WBC title is not up for grabs. Why is that, John?
It's because Amanda Serrano is continuing her campaign for women's boxing to be fought over 12 threes, so this fight is going to be 12 threes. The WBC are resisting. They believe that they've got enough evidence that it's a safety concern to have women fighting 12 threes, so their title is not on the line.
Yeah. I'll say one thing for the WBC. They're generally, they're the other way round. They tend to be the one that like to tweak the rules, that like to experiment a little bit. But they also, you know, they were the first to go from 15 rounds to 12, weren't they? I think that was for Leonard Hagler, which Leonard won handily. So I guess I can understand why this is very much on brand for the WBC, isn't it? Well, how do you kind of feel about women boxing 12 threes?
I don't like it, and it's not a safety concern or anything. I like that the 2-minute rounds turn women's boxing into a sprint. Right. It gives it a unique style different to men's boxing. I think if you make it 12 threes, slow the pace down, make it longer fights, yes, you'll probably get more stoppages, but the lack of depth will be exposed to a greater extent. Mm. It's, at the minute, I see it a bit like the difference between 2020 cricket and one day international. Mm. Like, it makes it more accessible, this shorter, faster, more frenetic format where tactics aren't quite as important. Like, I think if they go to 12 threes, it's going to lose something and the lack of depth will really be exposed. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, actually, I was going to make a similar comparison. I was going to say test cricket and one day is, but actually yours probably works better. But it is that, isn't it? It's you're taking, if with the shorter rounds, you to an extent, you're taking away the tactical element and it just becomes a blitz. And I've thought before, okay, well, maybe do something completely in the middle and go 8 threes or, you know, something like that. You know, maybe the same amount of time. So what, but it's 20 minutes. Maybe you do, I don't know, you go 7 3-minute rounds or you do something a little bit different. Make it a shorter fight, but then have the longer rounds so you get more stoppages. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's women's boxing needs something that's unique and about it to make it a selling point. And I think the 2-minute rounds probably does that. It makes them makes it a little bit more difficult to score because they fly by so quickly. But I suppose when you get 11 p.m. main event time, you don't mind when it flies by. I'm showing my age, aren't I, John? You get those 11 p.m. starts, and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, I want to go to bed. Yeah, I get you. But it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see how it goes. Interesting to see if it's any more or any less entertaining or if it's pretty much the same. We'll see on Friday when that fight takes place. I'm going to spin it around a little bit. I'm going to spin the running order around. I was going to start with last weekend, but I'm going to do it the other way around. We're going to look forward to this weekend instead. So the main kind of show that's going on is the kind of the big exhibition fight. And I noticed actually today, John, that the whole card, none of the card at all is on BoxRec, unless I'm looking in the wrong place. But it's Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou. You've got the WBC and lineal heavyweight champion against, you know, Francis Ngannou, who was the UFC heavyweight champion until he, you know, vacated his belt and left UFC. Have I missed something or is the whole card not on BoxRec?
The whole card's not on BoxRec, and it's bizarre because I believe two weekends ago, the whole Misfits fiasco was on BoxRec. Wow. So
that is strange, isn't it? That is really, really odd because you've got some decent fights on there, actually. Fabio Wardley and David Adelay, a bit annoying that the British title's not on the line, even though the card is being sanctioned by the British board. But that's a really interesting fight, isn't it, that one?
I love that fight. I think that is the sort of fight we need to see more often. Like, you've got two fighters from very contrasting backgrounds to get here. Fabio Wardley had four white collar fights. The manager, Mervyn Turner, seen something in him. He turned him over. Then within 18 months of turning pro, he was sparring Usyk ahead of the Bellew fight. He was sparring White ahead of the Hellenius fight. He has had a rapid rise for a guy with very little background and schooling, and it shows sometimes. Like, his head falls over his front foot, he reaches with his punches, but he's got such natural athleticism, it's been able to buy him the wins that he needs at this moment in time. He's fighting guys that are on the way out, coming in bad shape, but he's looked impressive getting rid of them. And then you've got David Adderley, who is an ABA winner, a junior ABA winner, a novice ABA winner, senior ABA winner, plucked straight from the amateur system by Frank Warren, given the big build-up on BT Sport and now TNT Sport. A guy who can look fantastic or frustrating. I believe he's a natural counter-puncher. You see he's looking for those openings and he's not fighting guys who are presenting him with the opportunities he wants. The concerning thing is when he fought somebody with a bit of ambition in Sokolovsky, he was very fortunate to get his hand raised. So it's an interesting fight. I'm really looking forward to it. What do you think, Cal?
Yeah, I am as well. It's all the time we sit here and, you know, we talk about British boxing and we talk about the, you know, domestic scene, and we end up talking about fighters that are on different promotional under different promotional banners. You know, if you think about the light heavyweights in this country, you know, just at the weekend we had Joshua Buatsi, Anthony Yard sat together at York Hall, but then they weren't boxing each other. Whereas we've got Fabio Wardley, who's a Matchroom DAZN fighter, and then you've got David Adelaide, who's a Frank Warren fighter that fights on TNT Sports, and it's like, oh, these two are never going to get together. But the British board, even though it's so weird what's gone on here, the British board kind of ordered a purse bid for this. They've managed to put a deal together and put it on the Ngannou Fury Ngannou undercard, and we've got ourselves a fight. And it's where the British board's kind of, you know, mandatory system has worked, but strangely it's not for the British title. But yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it, because we're actually going to see, you know, if you know, when the Sokolovsky fight, where he didn't box too well, was that just a blip? You know, has he improved since then? Has he got past that? And then Fabio Wardley, who's just been knocking everybody out, and looking at it, I would fancy Wardley to get the stoppage, just because he has just been knocking everybody out. But like you say, he's a very aggressive fighter, Wardley, and then Adelaide does like to, you know, counterpunch. And this could be tailor-made for him. It could be this could be the sort of fight where Adelaide finally, it's a good coming-out fight for him, you know?
Absolutely. It's a really interesting one. Like, I find Fabio Wardley a really interesting prospect because of his explosive athleticism, his hand speed, and his flaws. It makes him much must-watch TV. Like, every time he fights, I'm watching it because I'm wondering, is this the time he's going to get found out? Because I think he's getting moved at a pace where sooner or later he's going to get found out. And it could be here. Like, I would make him a slight favourite due to his hand speed and power. But if Adelaide can time him, then Adelaide can bang. He's stopping guys that are difficult to get rid of. So it's a really interesting one. I think that this is the best fight on the card. This is the main event. You know, the nonsense that follows, that's an exhibition, that's of no consequence to me. This is the best fight on the card as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. Yeah, I'm not going to buy the pay-per-view, but if there's a fight I'm looking forward to watching, it is this. It is going to be you know, Fabio Wardley against David Adelaide. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. And yeah, briefly on the main event, actually Joseph Parker's on the undercard as well, isn't he?
Yeah. Joseph Parker is fighting Simon Keane, the Canadian.
Yes.
Lost once. It's an interesting heavyweight undercard. You've got Arslan Bek Mukhmadov, who is a Canadian-based fighter who is just a wrecking machine. He's all out offense. Again, I don't think he's got the highest ceiling in the world, but he'll knock out a lot of C and D level fighters. I don't think anybody's gone more than two rounds with him yet. He's a lot of fun. Moses Itauma's there.
Yep. Pakoli
and Takam.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot, isn't there? A lot of heavies as well. Have you seen much of Simon Keane?
Yeah, bits and pieces over the years, because he's been linked with various different British fighters and stuff. He's not the best. He really isn't particularly good. I think this is a fight where Joseph Parker will look good. If Parker's got anything left in the tank, he should be looking impressive here.
Interesting as well, Parker's obviously a boxer. I don't know if he still is with Boxer. I know he's obviously very friendly with the Furies and the Fury family, but he's managed obviously to get himself a spot on the Saudi card. There's obviously a lot of money being dished around for this card, and so everybody's been allowed to go and box on it. I always thought that, you know, Joseph Parker, you know, there's fighters out there that, you know, that he could be facing, and it seems like they're just trying to rebuild him. I'm not sure what he kind of does after that, really. And then Takam and Martin Bacoli, another one. Isn't he with Boxer as well?
Yep, he is. But there's enough money going about that everybody can all be friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair enough. Yeah, I'm glad they're all getting paid. I think, you know, and it's, you know, I'd rather these fights weren't in Saudi. I'd rather they were in the UK, but, you know, they're going to be on a reasonable hour. So that's always a positive. But what I kind of thought that, you know, that Joseph Parker, I would like to have seen him get in with Fraser Clark, because they were both on Boxer, and Fraser Clark needs nudging along, doesn't he? It just feels like he's been treading water for ages. Have you heard anything what's going on with him next?
I haven't heard anything in a while. There's got to be a little bit of a step up. I actually don't mind the way that they're moving Fraser Clark. My biggest issue is the fact that they say that they're going to move him faster than they're actually intending to. The people he's fighting are fine. Facing Marius Vak is okay for the stage of his career that he's at. Like, I know he's turned over later than most and needs to get a bit of a hurry on, but for where he actually is, it's not actually a big deal. But it's when they're saying that they're going to take the Wardley fight, oh no, wait, we aren't. Mm. That's what frustrates people. Like, be honest. If you're like, we're going to give this guy a bit of time, let him learn his trade, fair enough, no arguments. Don't say you're going to move him quickly and then keep him on a very traditional pace. That's how I see it, at least. What do you think, Cal?
Yeah. I think you got it exactly right. Him or his team talked him into a fight that they clearly weren't prepared to take, you know, with Fabio Wardley. He's like, yeah, we want the Fabio Wardley fight. And then when the board called it, they were like, nah, no thanks. And it's like, it made him look a bit divvy, to be honest. It wasn't the best look for him. A lot of people that I know really, really like Moses Itauma. So I'm going to go through this undercard, and I want you to tell me how many of these people he could beat right now. So you've got Tyson Fury, obviously not, Francis Ngannou, Fabio Wardley, David Adelaide, Joseph Parker, Simon Keane, and Carlos Takam and Mike Bacoli. How many of them do you think he could beat right now?
Ngannou.
Just Ngannou. Not Takam.
Ngannou, definitely.
Yeah.
Depends how much. Like, Takam looked good against Yoka. He had his moments against Joe Joyce. I think he's still too dangerous at this point. Itauma is a hard-hitting southpaw, but the boy's a baby. He was fighting at youth level as an amateur. He's learning his trade. I wouldn't want to put him in with somebody hard hitting at this point. He could beat Mukhmadov's opponent. He could beat Simon Keane, probably. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Those would be fine.
Yeah.
Any of the more experienced guys, I wouldn't be chucking him anywhere near just now. Like, he could potentially beat them. He hits hard. He's a southpaw. He's explosive, etc., etc. But there's absolutely no need. We see heavyweights getting chinned all the way along, and we've seen Talma's brother, Carol, get upset last year, so there's absolutely no need to be moving this guy at breakneck speed as far as I'm concerned. How many do you think he beats?
I just said that to be stupid, but there's... I think he might do Takam. I think he just might be too fresh. I don't know anything about Junior Anthony Wright, so I'm going to take your word for him. Simon Keane, yeah, I think he might do him. Joseph Parker, he might old man him. Yeah, Dave Adley, that'd be fun, but Dave Adley would probably be a bit too... Yeah, so I think he'd beat Takam. I think that's the headline. I think he'd do Takam, but everybody else, probably not. The reason I talk about him is because, you know, a lot of people I know are kind of talking about him, but also Frank Warren is talking about, you know, they're looking to try and break Mike Tyson's record of being the youngest heavyweight champion. He was 20, was he? 21?
20, yeah. It's... Remember the last two British heavyweights they said this about, though?
Yeah, Dubois.
Dubois, and do you remember the other one?
No.
Huey Fury.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. So not a strong lineage.
Honestly, it's the Mike Tyson curse as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they should probably stop talking about that, shouldn't they? With Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou, it is definitely an exhibition, isn't it?
It is. The WBC have created some Riyadh season blood money belt.
Strange. Very, very strange. Yeah, it's... I don't know. I remember seeing Fury talk about, you know, Mayweather and the exhibitions a while ago, and, you know, kind of with a... He had that kind of envy in his eye when he said it, and it's like, okay, he wants a bit of that. And so, but I don't think there's many others out there for him, really, for better heavyweight. There's not really many exhibitions out there, just because he is actually the heavyweight champion, so it's a little bit silly. But it seems like they're going to get this out of the way, and Ngannou looks awful, doesn't he? He looks like he would lose to most of the people on the card on Saturday. But then after that, they've already announced, you know, Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. I imagine the guys from Saudi wanted to announce it because he was getting a lot of stick for the Ngannou fight. So if you say, look, we're going to do Usyk as well, then people will kind of get on board with it. It looks like Usyk's going to be ringside, doesn't it? I think Joshua might be out there. I think Manny Pacquiao is going to get flown out. I think Floyd's going to get flown out. I think they're going to try and fill it up with as many kind of boxing people as possible. But did you see the noise in the week about, you know, Usyk saying he kind of wants a 14-week camp, he wants a little bit of time? Do you think he'll get the 14 weeks, or do you think they'll say, just look, we're doing this in December?
It is possible he'll get 14 weeks, because I believe Riyadh season is running to March.
Oh, okay.
So they could still conceivably do it during this Riyadh season. So it's possible. It's all going to depend on what they can negotiate. Realistically, I'm imagining the calling for a 14-week camp is looking for an extra few quid to be chucked in to get it over the line for December. I think this is the equivalent of Derek Chisora sitting at the head table saying that Eddie Hearn's fucking him without Vaseline. And that he's going to withdraw from the card if he doesn't get more money, etc., etc. I think this is just a negotiation ploy. When you're dealing with people with very deep pockets, milk them for all they're worth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Usyk's, you know, he's not a young man. You know, he's not... I can't imagine there's many fights there left for him, to be honest, just because... You know, just because he's a long amateur career, you know, not the longest pro career, but a lot of wear and tear, you know, on his body, and you know, he's gonna need to make as much money as he can before he kind of checks out and does something else for the rest of his life. So I don't blame him. I think you're right. I'm not sure it will happen in December, but I think it will definitely happen, and I think it will happen in January. I think there's too much invested now for Tyson Fury to pull any fuckeries and to try and find a way out of it. I think we'll get the fight, and you know, we'll get an undisputed champion, hopefully. So we'll see. I'm not sure. Yes, you know, I might watch the main event. I don't know. just for shits and giggles, but the main thing really is the undercard of the weekend, because I think there's a good fight there. And actually, I noticed there's a DAZN card at the weekend as well, isn't there? Not a British one, in the US. Oshiek Foster's fighting, isn't he?
Yeah, Foster Hernandez is a fight I really like. Like, I was big on the Rocky Hernandez train when he was a teenage phenom coming up, beating good guys like Victor Terrazas when he was 18, 19 years old. Then he suffered a shock defeat, has rebuilt, had some managerial issues, and has now got the Foster fight. I think this is a really good fight. I think it's a really good style clash. If Hernandez is successful, I would love to see him against Lee Wood at Forest Stadium later on this year. I think that would be a fantastic style clash, but it's a really good fight. Like, that is the fight with a WBC title on the line that you should be watching this weekend, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. What do you think of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I think it's a really interesting fight. You know, Rocky Hernandez is on really good form. You know, it'd be good to see. You know, Foster's been being spoken around in kind of British boxing circles, because, you know, I think a lot of people kind of hoped that, you know, that Cordina would get that fight, you know, because Cordina's won the IBF title at Super Feather and not really had the opportunity to unify or really do much at all, to be honest. So it'll be good to see him in action, good to see Hernandez, and hopefully we get the winner over here, you know, sometime in the new year. Yeah, looking forward to that one. Looking forward to watching.
Absolutely. And on Fury and Ngannou, what do you make about the outrage? Are you outraged? Has this fight really annoyed you, or do you just accept it as what it is?
I think the thing that annoys me about it, I can see why, as I was saying before, I can see why they've announced the Usyk fight, because if they announce the Ngannou fight and there's no sign of the Usyk fight coming, Fury looks worse than, you know, Fury doesn't look good anyway. I don't think he gives a shit about his reputation, to be honest, which is fair enough. He's got enough sycophants around him that, you know, it doesn't really matter to him. But it annoys me, John, because it does annoy me because he's the heavyweight champion. He is one of the best fighters in the world, heavyweight, and he's fighting a guy that, you know, belongs in a boxer size class. You know, he's a UFC fighter, and yes, he can bang in UFC. But as I've said before, we've seen when UFC fighters, you know, Conor McGregor for me is the prime example. This guy was knocking people out in UFC. He went and fought a 41-year-old Floyd Mayweather, and he looked like he couldn't break an egg in a pair of boxing gloves. And that's where you can see the difference between being a puncher in MMA and being a puncher in boxing. It's two completely different things. And to have a guy that's a complete novice in a boxing ring against the best heavyweight in the world, arguably, it's stupid. It's stupid. But if we get Usyk next, you know, 3 months' time, then I'll swallow it. What about you?
I don't mind it because it's nothing new. Like,
yeah.
Do you remember the whole story about Muhammad Ali fighting Antonio Inoki in the 70s?
Yes, of course, yes.
You know, I just see it as a bit like that all over again. You know, lineal heavyweight champs fighting somebody of a mixed martial arts background-ish. But at least this is a boxing match and not some sort of strange MMA hybrid,
yeah,
like Ali and Oki.
Yeah, poor Ali got his legs kicked in that night, didn't he?
Yeah.
Not good. Wasn't good for him at all. Yeah, and like I said, if we get Usyk next, then great. We get Fury Usyk, undisputed title. If it's in Saudi, then whatever. It'll be a reasonable hour for us in the UK. The guys, you know, the people in America will have to just put up with it. Well, it would be, what, mid-afternoon over there? That could be worse. Anyway, I fucking love watching a new A at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. 1 p.m. It's fucking great. Yeah, I can live with it. I can live with it. I'm not going to pay too much attention. I think it'll be a complete whitewash. But it's an exhibition. Let's talk about some actual boxing. So last week was kind of up and down, really. We had a decent fight, you know, for the British cruiserweight title, but we had a fight put out right with Dan Aziz and Joshua Boatse, and Dan Aziz pulled out with a back injury. It was pretty late in the day, wasn't it, John?
It was late in the day, and then you had all the usual rumours that swirl around when something like this happens late in the day, that ticket sales were poor and that the injury is just a cover-up, which we hear all the time. We'll never know what truth's in it. I don't think Dan Aziz is the sort of guy who would go along with something like that personally, but, you know, we give Boxer a lot of stick. Like, Ben Shalom says a lot of stupid things. Their cards aren't always of the best quality, but give them credit where it's due. The fact that they managed to save that undercard, move it to York Hall, and have Lowell and Chamberlain top the bill was some really good promoting. I think they deserve a lot of credit for that, because we do tend to give them stick when they deserve it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I thought they copped a little bit of grief for, you know, saying, oh, we, you know, we'll do the refunds in due course. And then, you know, they caught the backlash saying, no, we want our refunds now so we can go and buy York Hall tickets, or some people at least. And they did. And they, you know, they refunded everybody that had bought tickets. You know, they had a pretty good show for York Hall, and they can go again with Buatsi and Aziz. And I could see Buatsi was gutted, like, when he was ringside. You could see he was really G'd up. He'd obviously done the weight, was ready to fight. And then a couple of days before, Dan Aziz pulls out. But I think Boxer couldn't have handled it any better than what they did. Everybody got their refunds. They saved the undercard, so everybody got paid. Sky Sports got their, you know, boxing slot filled for the weekend. And we got, you know, an okay card at, you know, at the York Hall, headlined by, you know, Lowell and Isaac Chamberlain for the British and Commonwealth Cruiserweight titles. John, I thought Chamberlain looked like a level above, to be honest. You could see that he'd boxed at the higher level. You could see that he'd boxed better fighters. And Lowell he just looked a level below. Every time Chamberlain would faint, he'd react. And he was just getting moved around and outboxed pretty much every round. But I was pleased for Chamberlain. How about you?
I was delighted for Isaac Chamberlain. Like, he's always come across as a really nice guy. He's a good fighter. I always suspected, and still do, to be perfectly honest, that he is a victim of the cruiserweight limit moving up to 200 pounds.
Right.
In the old 190 days, I think he would be much closer to a world title contender than he currently is. I think that they're just a bit too big for him. You know, if you look at the very best guys in the division, Anopataya, Billum Smith, Ryakpor, Okoli, they're just all a bit too big for him. But against Lowell, he was brilliant. I thought his feints with his feet, with his lead hand, was brilliant. Lowell was completely bamboozled. In many ways, Chamberlain found himself in a similar situation when he fought Okoli at the O2. Came a bit too soon for him. He froze under the lights. He was down a couple of times. The fight itself was really ugly. So I think it was something similar for Lowell. It was just too big a step up, too soon. And he was found out a little bit. It doesn't mean that he can't come again, but he was fighting like someone who believed the knockout would come. That all he didn't need to panic in those early rounds. He'd find the shot at some point. And then as the rounds went by, I think he began to realise that Chamberlain wasn't going to stand right in front of him for him to land that right hand that all his previous opponents have. So there's work to do. It's a problem that punchers often have, that they don't set up their work. They don't have a plan B. And I think that's just a little bit of what happened to Lowell. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought he's one of those guys that kind of fell in love with his own power. And he thought he could just, at some point, he'd find a shot, because he'd seen Okoli drop Chamberlain a few times. He'd seen Chris Billum Smith hurt him. He probably thought, oh, I'll find a shot at some point and I'll hurt him and I'll get him out of there. But Chamberlain was just too good. He was too good. He just did everything better than him. And actually, Isaac Chamberlain was, in the very early years of Below the Belt, gave me an interview at Miguel's gym. I popped down with my phone and a silly little microphone and had a chat with him that day, and he was really, really, really nice, and, you know, was really happy to give me his time. And I said, if for people that don't know you, how would you describe yourself? And he said, I'm kind of like James Toney. And he's nowhere near as good as James Toney was. But I can actually see that a bit on Saturday night. I remember I thought back to that interview and him saying that. And I thought, do you know what? I can see what you're saying. Maybe more cruiserweight James Toney than super middleweight. But I could see what he meant. I could see what he said. And I was really pleased for him just because he's been out there for a long time.
He's too mobile to be a cruiserweight, James Toney. James Toney, a cruiserweight, was brilliant because he would stand there against monsters like Vasily Yurov and just bob and weave with his feet planted, just sway and miss shots by millimeters. Like, it was beautiful. It was the most relaxed style you've ever seen. And then coming back with these hurtful counters, like, I can see where he's going with it, but he's far too energetic, far too mobile. James Toney liked his cheeseburgers and cigars way too much to move around the ring for 12 rings like Isaac Chamberlain did on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's a fair point. That is a fair point. You're right. What was also nice on Saturday was how complimentary Chris Billingsmith was of Chamberlain, because they'd boxed and he beat him, and you know, he could have gone kind of the Josh Taylor route of saying, well, I beat you, you're shit kind of thing. But he didn't. He was actually really complimentary of him. And you could see he was actually really happy for him that he'd won the fight. So I quite like that from Chris Billingsmith. I like to hate on him because everybody seems to like him. And so I just like to go the other way. But Chris Billingsmith came across really well on Saturday. And I thought that was a really, really nice touch.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, I'm in the Chris Billingsmith fan club. I think he's just a really nice guy. There's a reason why no one's got a bad word to say about him. Like, he's a nice guy. He's got a crowd-friendly style. Match him with anybody who isn't Lawrence Okolie, and I think he gives you a decent fight. He's a nice guy. The show of respect between himself and Chamberlain was brilliant to watch. And I'm glad that Billingsmith is getting a break from Okolie, that he's coming back and fighting Masternak, which should be pretty straightforward. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Chris Billingsmith.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was kind of hoping that Okolie would move up to heavyweight and those two wouldn't have to fight again, because that was not a fun fight. But I think that was not fun. It wasn't even remotely entertaining.
It was barely watchable, never mind entertaining.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. I don't want to see those two in a ring. I'm not sure I want to see Okolie in a ring again, to be honest. And I like Okolie. I like him as a person. Again, early days of Below the Belt, gave me an interview, super nice. But the way he's boxed in the last couple of fights, he's been awful. And he's fell in love with his own power, fell in love with his own right hand. He just seemed to try and dine out on the right hand. And the last couple of fights, not just the Billingsmith fight, the fight before then, he was just trying to pour with a jab and throw an overhand right. And yeah, it did all right against someone that not quite at world level. But, you know, against a good fighter like Chris Billingsmith, it's not going to work. He's got to really think about what he wants to do, Okolie, because he needs to change something. With Chamberlain, do you think he sticks around at British level and defends? Vidal Riley was there at the weekend. I saw him on Sky Sports News today. He had a lovely Spurs jacket on, which was nice to see. you don't see many Spurs supporting boxers, to be honest. So that was quite nice. Do you think he sticks around at domestic, tries to defend the British title? Or do you think he tries to go for European or something else?
I think boxer would probably like the Vidal Riley fight. I think they want to cash in on Vidal Riley's built-in fan base, his association with KSI, etc., etc. He is a much more marketable proposition going forward than Isaac Chamberlain. Don't get me wrong, Chamberlain-Billingsmith was a good fight. If they can get Chamberlain a couple of wins at fringe world level, I'm sure a rematch would sell quite well in Bournemouth, but Vidal Riley is probably the person they're looking to try and get that world title on and bring in a new generation of fans ASAP. Saying that, we have seen Boxer be cautious in the past. Maybe they're going to let the shackles off when it's all in-house. We'll need to wait and see. How do you think it plays out?
Yeah, the only thing is Chamberlain said he did his bicep. So it just depends on how badly he did it at the weekend. Hopefully it's nothing too bad and he can box, you know, sometime, you know, early next year. And if he can, then yes, I want to see him defend the British title. I want to see him win it outright. No, you know, this, you know, I want to see him. Yeah, he's in his 30s now, isn't he, Isaac? But
yeah,
you know, I'd like to see him, you know, have a defence or two. If he doesn't have time to win it outright, then fair enough, because the board aren't the best at, you know, ordering fights. So yeah, I think that's absolutely fine. I'd like to see him defend the British and then see if he can either get a European title fight or something, you know, an eliminator or something. But yeah, definitely really, really pleased for him. Was there anything on the undercard that stuck out for you?
The Green Gilly fight was fantastic. That was a proper York Hall fight. Mm. There was skill, there was power punches, crowd was involved in it. Like, that is what York Hall was all about. Really good fight. Fantastic show of respect between the two guys afterwards. You know, that's what you want to see. That is the sort of fight. If we had fights like that every week, the sport would grow. Like, that is a great advert for the sport. I thought it was fantastic. What did you think?
Yeah, same. Absolutely the same. I think if you want to grow the sport, and, you know, my kind of formative years of boxing, watching boxing, I mean, was watching shows like Saturday Night, you know, for basketball hoop, and, you know, in a leisure centre, you know, for the British title or an English title or whatever, or British title headlining and fights on the undercard. That's what made me really, really get into boxing, you know. And so the more of those shows that boxer can put on that are competitive, they've got domestic titles as the headliner, then more, I'm all for it. I'm all for it, absolutely. And yes, Gillian Green was a good fight. I think Green would have been perhaps the slight favourite going in, but, you know, it was good. It was good to see. Good to see Commonwealth title as well. So yeah, I was really, really pleased with that. And then even the Michael Hennessy Joe Laws fight was semi entertaining as well. It wasn't too bad either, was it? And Joe Laws, you know, from going out, you know, calling out Devin Haney. Or was it Devin Haney, where you at? When he was down at lightweight. And now he's at middle. Super middle. And you can see how pleased he was with the win, can't you?
Yeah, and it worked well for him. By his own admission, 2 weeks ago, he was eating cheesecake and drinking cocktails. And he fought like somebody who knew that he wasn't in the best shape. Mm. He fought in spurts. He conserved his energy. It was a good fight, you know. I'm more than happy to see fights like that. It doesn't need to be two world-class guys. Just give me two guys that are pretty much evenly matched. I don't care what level they're at.
100%. 100%. As long as they're evenly matched and, you know, there's a reason for them to be fighting, whether it's, you know, an English title or an eliminator or something, or just to get back in the mix again. You know, Joe Laws needed that to get back in the mix again, to feel like, you know, a boxer again, and to feel like he can still do something in the sport. And so that's why, yeah, I was pleased for Laws, and I was happy with the card. And that, again, another one that belonged at the York Hall.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And on DAZN, so what did you do on, how did you watch these two on Saturday? Did you have one on the laptop, one on the TV? How did you navigate the DAZN Sky Sports thing last Saturday? Because we had Jack Catterall and Jorge Linares on the other channel.
I watched Sky Sports and I caught up with DAZN on the app, which is, as I've always said before, it's one of the best things about DAZN is that you can easily catch up on anything you've missed. Spoiler free, you know. The app's great like that. It means that unless there's a really good fight that makes me want to watch the DAZN card, I'm probably going to watch the other one and catch up with DAZN because it's just easier. Mm. What did you do?
I did DAZN on the TV, Sky Sports on the laptop. So I had them both going at the same time. The main events clashed, but not direct clash. So there were, when one was having, you know, one was having the 1 minute break, the other round was still going on, so it kind of worked. But I'll be honest, after about six rounds of the Jack Catterall fight, I wasn't watching it anymore, and I was just watching the Isaac Chamberlain fight, because even though they were both not very competitive, I just enjoyed watching Isaac Chamberlain more than I did watching Jack Catterall. I was really disappointed with that at the weekend, John. You know, Jack Cattle, he had a lot of credibility coming out of the Josh Taylor fight, and he got kind of messed around in terms of having a rematch. But he's come back, he's signed with DAZN, he's had two fights, and you're just like, snooze. Both the fights he's had. Jorge Linares at the weekend, he's not a 140 fighter. He's someone that's been stopped at the weight before. I was expecting Jack Cattle to get him out of there, really. And nothing short of getting him out there within the first six rounds would have been good enough. I just thought it was really, really poor. Am I being a bit harsh, though?
From an entertainment standpoint, I completely agree with you. Like, it was a poor spectacle. As a performance, it was everything that's good and bad about Jack Cattle. Jack Cattle controls the pace. He dictates the tempo. He doesn't get hit very much. He lands his own eye-catching shots, all in the pro column. The cons for Jack Cattle is he has got a very low punch output. Because of his counter-punching ability, his opponent's output drops as well. He is safety first, he is somewhat negative, and he does tend to fade towards the second half of the fight. It's ultimately what cost him in the Taylor fight. Like, that fight isn't the blatant robbery, in my opinion, that other people see it as. I've watched it back twice, and it is much more competitive than Matt Macklin and the Sky Sports commentary team would have you believe. They fell into the old Jim Watt and hauling routine of creating a narrative early on, and when the fight changed, they didn't really adjust what they were saying. You know, Cattle's output does drop in the second half of the fight. I still thought that he probably did enough to win it, but it could really have gone either way as far as I'm concerned. And that's not me saying that wearing my kilt and my CU Jimmy hat wrapped in assault hair right now. I genuinely thought that the Taylor fight isn't this disgraceful decision that other people do. But he's a frustrating fighter to watch. He doesn't fight very often, and he has had issues with injuries, but I think that's partly because he's just not a draw. With the guarantee that he's on, no one wants to be staging Jack Cattle fights regularly, because no one's going to pay to turn up to watch it, and who's going to watch it on TV? And I think he's a really nice guy. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a really good boxer. He's just not much of a fun watch, is he?
No, he's not. He's not. And, you know, I remember after the fight, I tweeted, well, Prograin Haney won't lose any sleep. Well, they certainly wouldn't, because they probably would have fell asleep watching that. It was just boring. It was just boring. And I probably was guilty of getting sucked into the Josh Taylor, that was a robbery type thing, just because I really dislike Josh Taylor, to be honest.
He does make it easy to dislike him, in all fairness.
He's a bad winner. We talk about bad losers, he's a bad winner. He shows a real lack of class whenever he wins a fight. And you don't have to be classless when you've won. You've won. You don't have to be a dickhead about it. I don't like Josh Taylor. And so when it looked like he was losing that fight, I was like, yes, that's the worst Robbie I've ever seen. that's Brandon Rios, Richard Arbrill levels. Like, it wasn't, but I get your point. So yeah, but then Cattle, like I said, he had a lot of credit going in, and it just, he never really got going. But you know, they're looking at maybe making him against the winner of Prograin and Haney. Him, fucking hell, Cattle and Haney is not going to be fun to watch, not at all. I think you kind of want to. Looking at the rankings are updated, you know, at the start of the month. He's number seven with the WBA, number five with the WBC, number seven with the IBF, and number five with the WBO. Obviously, they'll update the rankings at the end of the month, so maybe he would have moved up a couple of places or one or two of them. O'Hara Davies looks like he's going to get the Rolly Romero fight. Him and Teofimo Lopez, I actually think would be a pretty decent fight. I think that would be really, really interesting. I'm not sure he'll get it. Maybe he can get, you know, the IBF doesn't have a mandatory, it doesn't have one or two ranked, so maybe he can navigate his way to a fight with that. Or does he just go straight for the Josh Taylor rematch? They're still talking about each other, aren't they, John? Would you like to see that at welter?
Not really. Like, the first fight just wasn't great to watch. Their styles did not gel at all. I think Taylor would probably be better at 147. Potentially Catterall could be too. Like, it's possible that he fades in the second half of fights because he's finding it tough to make 140 himself. I don't know. Like, it could be a better fight, but it just wasn't good enough that I want to see it again. I think if that fight had been controversial but entertaining, the rematch would have happened because there would have been a great public demand.
Yeah.
Realistically, there's a handful of 1,000 hardcore boxing fans on Twitter calling for that fight, most of which would probably watch it on a dodgy Fire Stick or a stream anyway rather than going to see it. Like, there's no money in that rematch, I don't think. Like, there's a bit of bad blood, but the fight just wasn't good. Would you want to see it again?
Yes, just because I don't see what else there is for either one of them. I suppose Catterall could maybe navigate to get a world title fight. Josh Taylor, I think, is done. I'm not sure there's much left. You know, I think he's had back-to-back really poor performances. And a fighter like Josh Taylor, he's had a tough career, you know, boxed a lot of good fighters, undisputed, you know, junior welterweight champion. No one can knock his achievements. And I wouldn't mind seeing Jack Catterall end his career just because I don't like him. But
at least you're on his cut.
Just because, yeah, I don't like the cut of his jib. But, you know, I don't know. I'd watch it. And if it was on Sky Sports, I'd watch it. But if it wasn't, it'd probably be a dodgy Fire Stick, like you say. Yeah, but I don't know. We shall see. That's about it, John. That is about it. Unless there was anything else. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else that leapt out at you over the last week or so?
No, I think that isn't. O'Hara Davies going to be fighting Ishmael Barroso on a Ryan Garcia undercard.
You're right. You are right. Well, is that a vacant belt? Is it?
I think is it an interim or a final eliminator? I think they're keeping the strap on Rowley basically, and the winner's guaranteed a fight with Rowley.
Yes,
is the upshot of it. It's strange, like. 4 years ago, I would have said that's an awful fight, but based on the form that each of them has been in lately, I'm a lot more interested in it now than I would have been in, say, 2019, 2020.
Yeah, me too. I'm interested in it, and I like O'Hara Davies. He's not great, but he did well to win the Golden Contract, one of the MTK shows that they put on. I was happy for him that he won that final eliminator against Lewis Ritson. How that got to be made as a final eliminator, I'll never know, but fair play to whoever navigated that, and fair play to O'Hara Davies. I think, again, I like O'Hara Davies because I dislike Josh Taylor. What is it? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So yeah, it's I'll be happy to see that happen. I would love to see O'Hara Davies at least get a shot. Him and Romero would be fun. Like, the press conference would be fun on its own. And then the fight, I think the fight would be pretty fun as well, because neither of them are going to stink the joint out. I think they'd get into a scrap, and I don't think it would go the distance. But we shall see. Hopefully it happens. We'll see. All right, John, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure having me on. Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.